Welcome to A Bite of CS, Computer Science Education Conversations. I'm Bridget Castelluccio, and I'm joined by my co-host, Corey Rogers. This is episode zero. So today we're going to be discussing Go Unplugged for Better Computational Thinking. It's on page 49 of Hello World, the big book of computing pedagogy. And we get to talk about this with Charlene St. Jean. The key ideas of the article are that we don't have to have a device to teach computer science. In fact, when Bridget and I are in classrooms, especially early childhood classrooms, that's a concern that comes up a lot, that teachers would actually prefer to not be using a device with kids and want them to be engaged in play and with handheld objects. The article shares research done where some teachers used some code.org lessons with students. One group of students got three unplugged lessons before two plugged lessons on the platform with code.org where kids do the coding. If you're teaching computer science, you know what that looks like. And then the other group of students only engaged in the plugged activities online. And I'm going to quote the article. They found that students who start out in computing education with unplugged activities before switching over to computer-based activities show a significant advantage in computational thinking skills compared to their peers. So we're very excited that Charlene is here with us today. She is an elementary media specialist in Maryland, and she and I have huge connections with our elementary background, and she is a wealth of knowledge. So not surprisingly, she said her favorite CS topic is to teach using unplugged activities to provide foundational concepts of computer science for younger students and then continue that on so they can move on to the upper grades and have a deeper connection with their learning.
Hello, hello.
Well, hey, Charlene, we're really glad that you're here with us today.
I'm glad to be here.
And you're going to share all about the really cool unplugged learning that you do. You share with us where you teach and what you teach.
I teach at Charlene Elementary School, and I'm a media specialist, so I see all the grades pre-K through 5.
Whoa, that's a big job. So did you start out in computer science?
No. So a little bit for me, I started 31 years ago now. I started I'm born and raised in New York. I started teaching in high schools, GED, to high schoolers that were at risk. Some were pregnant mothers or things like that. So I worked in a nursery first, and then I started teaching GED, math and science. And then when I married 12 years ago, I moved here, and then I started teaching in the library, being a media specialist. And I just started doing, you know, keyboarding and things like that. And I was like, these students need more. And I started getting into like circuitry and laying down copper tape with the kids. And then I got into Scratch, and I started taking classes. And before you know it, just started to ball into all of, you know, computational thinking. And then all of a sudden I started getting into it. And now I'm really passionate about making sure that our littles get that computational computer science foundation, like they learn the ABCs and 1, 2, 3s. They need to learn computational thinking because that's a foundation, not only for computer science, but just for 21st thinking careers and life.
As an early childhood person myself, I am totally on board with that because I feel like if we're not going to catch them when they're older, it'll be something brand new to learn when they've already learned a lot of things. So when you catch them when they're little and they're on fire and build that, you know, thought process, the problem solving, and that passion maybe in the little grades leads to some big things when they're older.
Yes, it definitely does.
So what's it look like for your kids then when you're teaching them about computational thinking in your classes?
Okay, so I have, I have pre-K, K, and first, and I tend to teach them the same block. So for example, I start off with the basics, algorithms, decomposition, and oddly enough, abstraction. Ooh, that sounds really big. With algorithms and decomposition, I read them a book because I'm the media specialist. So everything starts with reading. So I read them a book, for example, called My Pet Bird. I teach them vocabulary words like feathers and healthy and bird, obviously, and fly, and all the words that come from the book. I then take the book, turn them into flashcards, go through the words with the students, and then I decompose the word on a piece of graph paper. And I put, and you know, giant graph paper, and I put a letter in each box, all mixed up. And I give the students, since they're five, I give them the word, let's say feathers. And then I give them the mixed up box that has all the letters spelling out feathers, but it's all jumbled. So, and I say to them, I say, okay, here's the word feathers, it is together. And here's the word feathers decomposed. And they go feathers, decomposed, together, decomposed. And then once we do that, I have little tiny red arrows. And then they have to place in the in-between spots on the graph paper, where they have to then place the red arrows that will point to the next letter. So they're writing an algorithm on how to spell the word feathers. So they're learning that. So they're doing an algorithm, and they can tell me. And then I have on the bottom of the paper, because again, they're learning left from right, so they're learning directionality. So I have to put on the bottom, okay, this is our left and this is our right. And they will say, okay, I have to go two arrows to the left and then down to get from F to E. And then they keep on going. And so, you know, I started with a smaller word, and I started with fly. That's a part of the whole thing. And then from there, you know, I go on with the rest of the vocabulary words. And then I do a different book and to just bump that up. And then for abstraction, I play this game called, it's called Contact or Composition, but it starts with a C. I can't remember the name right now, but it's okay. It's basically a game with animals when you have to get a particular criteria in order to guess the animal. That's abstraction, because abstraction means I need this, I need that, I need this in order to identify what animal it is. So students who are playing the game, they have to put down little orange circles onto the different attributes of the animal. The student whose turn it is has to look at the picture card. They have a variety of different animals, and they have to see, okay, the color of the animal is black and white. The animal eats grass. The animal has four legs. The animal, I know I need an animal, abstraction, I need an animal that has horns, four legs, that's black and white. And then they'll go, oh, cow. And we continue to play that game. Now, do they know the word abstraction? No. But they're learning the concrete concept of abstraction. And then when they get to second grade, now I do this starting in, say, pre-K, I do it again in K, do it again in first. So by the time they get to first and second grade, when I say abstraction, I've already built this in their mind of what it means. You need to choose based on the attributes or the protocols. That works for when you're working in computer science, if you're doing coding. I think it's also a P, where you have to, it's the parallels or the parameters. There you go.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
Parameters, and when you're doing coding, when you put up certain parameters, where if it's this or that, then you know it's this. Or if it's just that, then it's that. And so whatever. So you have to meet the parameters. Another game we play is if you have it has, in order for you to get a match, it has to have the same shape, color, and number. Those are the parameters. So if it has the same shape, number, or color, then you know you have a match. And the kids will start, and after a while, once I teach them, I back off, and we'll be like, no, it doesn't have the same shape. So that means it's not a match. And doing abstraction. Again, they don't know the word yet, but they're doing the concept. And so
is that game called Concept?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Okay. Charlene, I kind of love a board game in my house. Bridget says. We play lots of board games. And we have that one, and I have shared that with teachers before, but more about writing, like having kids be descriptive. And I never thought about it in terms of abstraction. That's genius. That's so smart.
We have fun with that.
So then when they're in second grade is when you start to use vocabulary like abstraction with them.
Yeah, well, the larger one. Even when they're little, I'll say algorithm, and then I'll say step-by-step instruction. I'll say decomposition, and I'll show them this, but they don't really, and I'll even say abstraction. I'll say the word, but I know they're not really getting it just yet. So by the time they get to second grade, when I repeat these words, then I can say, okay, what is an algorithm? They can tell me what it is. They can understand that it means go step by step. They can understand decomposition means to break things apart and in order to build something up, or reverse engineer. And then if I say abstraction, they go, okay, I know I need to take this and this in order to get what the parameters are asking me to select. So, you know, so, and then, so by the time then, when I do third, fourth, and fifth grade, when I do it on that level, then I'm doing like, let's say sight words for second, third, for third, fourth, and fifth. Well, if we're reading a particular book, I could do the same thing, have them break down a word and then use that word once they decompose it and then use the algorithm and then have them write a sentence using that word. Now you're building vocabulary. Now they're writing sentences, and then we go from sentences to paragraphs, and then now we're writing and reading. So, you know, it builds. That's the advantage of being a media specialist, because I get to see them.
Yeah, that whole time you get to see them, that pre-K through fifth. Yeah. And what I love is you aren't isolating these skills. You are incorporating it with reading. There's strong research with vocabulary that kids need to hear those words a lot of times before it sticks. Mm-hmm. So you just, every time that you do an activity that's hands-on, that's integrated with topics that they love, like animals and making games and the word building. Ah, I wish I would have known all those when I was still in the classroom. So now I'm just going to share them out with everyone.
There you go.
Well, that's kind of why we wanted you to be here too, because Charlene was in the pedagogy class, or the big book of computing pedagogy course that we taught. And she was sharing all these amazing ideas. And the other teacher librarians were like, oh, we can do this. Because I can't remember the requirements in New York. So you'll have to fill us in, Charlene. But in Iowa, our schools are being asked to make sure elementary kids get computer science instruction. And a lot of our schools, as you know, the core content time is so tight that a lot of our teacher librarians are getting asked to teach the bulk of the computer science. And I just remember our teacher librarians were like, oh, we can do this and we can still be reading books and teaching the library standards that we need to teach as well. So we knew that you had lots of nuggets, lots of really good things to share with people. So that's awesome.
Absolutely.
Fun. So what type of other unplugged things are you doing? Because I think that's the other thing that Bridget and I see a lot working with the classroom teachers, especially the early childhood folks, is they don't want kids on devices. And I think there's nothing wrong with that. I tend to agree. But then I feel like sometimes people are like, well, we don't have devices, so we can't be teaching computers or computational thinking. So just curious, like, what do you think about that? And then how do you get at those concepts without a device?
So I just gave my example for algorithm and decomposition and abstraction. So if I go up to the upper grades, we will, one of them, unplugged is another way you can do physical computing, which is still kind of unplugged because you actually have a physical device like microbits. So for example, with fifth grade, I am doing a science, I'm collaborating with the fifth grade teachers to do a science lesson. I came to them with it. One of the fifth grade lead was going to take a class with me, but she couldn't. So I said, would you mind if I bring it? And she said, no problem. I said, I'll do those. So what I'm doing is the research part. That's where the librarian comes in. Kids come in and we're doing urban heat islands. So we're doing the whole research background to what does that mean? What is an urban? What does it mean by heat islands? How does that deal with minorities and poverty and lifespan? And then real life is like the Baltimore riots. Why did that happen? And all these little things that get plugged in. So that's the research piece.
Okay, hold on. I'm out. So what is an urban heat island?
Okay,
make sure you tell us. Okay, good.
So for example, in Baltimore, that's the maps that I show the fifth grade students, all based upon on Baltimore. Because again, that's what PG County, I mean, not PG County, but in Maryland. So they know it's real world. Not something we're just making up. So in Baltimore, they were studying urban areas, like it could be New York City, Manhattan, it could be Baltimore, different, any place where there are little trees, no trees at all, hardly any grass, but a lot of concrete. And so what happens is when the sun is hot constantly and the heat is hitting the concrete, it's impervious, which is one of our words. It's impervious. So that means that the sun bounces back off, it stays in the atmosphere, and it constantly heats up everything. So it's hotter in those areas, which then affects, a consequence of that is affects the air quality. Another consequence of that is if you already have underlying diseases, like you have asthma, if you have anything like that, and you live in a poor neighborhood and you're impoverished. And so all these things are connected. Redlining is in there. All of these words are connected. So you have these things that happen. Also, what happens is a lot of flooding in areas with a lot of concrete because there's runoff. So we're going to study what are the soil values? That's where microbits come in. We're going to take different types of soil. One of them, which includes concrete, where obviously then it's formed before you make it into concrete. different types of soil. We're going to run water through them and then use the microbit and code it to detect the level of electricity that flows, because water is conductive, not conductive, but it's sensitive. It's conductive. So we're gonna I already have all the tools. You get a long nail and you get some alligator clips and you hold the microbit and it becomes your reader and it shows you. So first you look at how fast the water flows through the different types of soil, and then you can measure the level of water that's left in the soil by how much conductivity of the electricity that does based on the microbit. Then to look at surface areas that heat up versus, let's say, concrete, grass, we then use the microbit as a light sensor. So you take it outside, you coat it, take it outside, and see how much light intensity is hit or based on the surface area, different surface areas. If you're around a place where there's all concrete, there's going to be a lot, the temperature should be higher or the light sensitivity should be higher that the microbit is going to read versus if you're in an area where there's grass and more shade because there's trees, it's going to be a little less. And so that they have this whole lesson. So what I'm doing now, I'm actually doing that in class now, I'm building the background. So in January and February, I'm going to do those two labs now that once we build all the background and talk about those pieces. So they're fascinated with the whole, how all those things connect with urban heat islands and how many, if you have trees and grass in your neighborhood, and how that affects health and the weather and flooding and all, how all of that connects. So we're having a good time with that. We're building. And then we also have to think about multilingual genres, which is also, I have to do that as well. So I have to make sure I have the, I have it up in different languages and playing it. I usually take Google Translate to put it up on my smart board, and I have both languages at the same time when I want to give directives. So that's one way. And with fourth grade, I'm doing sentence writing with a book. We're reading this book called My Life is a Book. And in that book, they have several different vocabulary words where the son of the author draws pictures to identify different words. So what I'm doing is I have the word, let's say reluctant is one of the first words, reluctant in bulk. This is for multilingual learners as well. And so what I do is I put up in directions and then I give them a sentence starter. And then we go into Canva, which has an AI program, which allows you to create images based off of descriptive words you give them. It pops up four images. They choose the image. It goes over to the workspace. And then they have to write a sentence describing the picture and a definition that now they know. So in the book, the word reluctant is like that someone's holding their hands like, I don't want it. So I know a little Spanish. So I go, no quiero. Reluctant. Then I say reluctant. So now they're going to create their own image. So that's going to stay in their mind. And then they're going to make a sentence based off the image they created using the vocabulary word from the story. So these are the different things that I do with the older kids. And most of that is still unplugged. It's like a mixture of unplugged and plugged, because they're reading a book and then they go to the computer. So we'd read the book and then go to the computer. So that was a different thing.
It sounds like you're kind of scaffolding them, which I think, like you said before, is like the blessing sometimes of getting to be a specialist teacher. I don't know what you guys call those.
Specialist. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was also a specialist teacher, but at middle school, but I felt like that was kind of a little bit of my superpowers. I got to see the kids progress, and I could make a 3-year plan versus a 1-year plan because I got to see them. So I think what I'm hearing you say is like you're kind of using the unplugged with the early childhood kids to build them to a scaffold where then they can go on to a device and start to program.
Exactly.
Well, I mean, but really it's you. So let's applaud you, not me. But
I'm like, what? But that's why my kids, by the time they get to third grade, they're ready to do work on book creative by making books, work with the AI, work with the microbits, work with circuitry, whatever I need them to do, because I've already built all of that formula language in pre-K, K1 and 2.
Well, and you've also helped them be able to like plan ahead. I mean, all those unplugged activities really activate that like planning knowledge before they get to that device. When you jump right to the device, sometimes then it's easy to skip that step. So that's been ingrained in them. So they are already planning and thinking before they ever get to the coding piece about what the problem is, what steps they may need to get, thinking about either decomposition or abstraction or you know, the steps needed in the algorithm. They've done that without mm-hmm. UI, so now they've got that strategy in their like tool belt.
Mm-hmm. And then they're able to, and then the other thing about it, then you get that collaboration piece, which is the other side of computational thinking, because they have to work together in teams and groups. And then when I have my after school club, I have a computer club where I then have them have, I have them do coding, go mice and BBot. Well, then they have to work together and, you know, take the little cards, write an algorithm and program that robot to go, you know, to go, they have to work together in a group. And, you know, you have little signs, I'm the debugger, I'm the, you know, I'm the programmer. And so you do these things and they're just having fun. One of the things, that's all they think about. And this is an unplugged activity, even though it's a little robot, but they're on the floor, they're using cards. It's they're not on devices. They're playing with a device, but they're not in front of a screen. So that's another way of doing it.
What are some of the strategies you have used with kids, specifically with BBots? Like, I know we've got lots of teachers in Iowa with BBots. In terms of like getting the kids engaged, and then have you had colleagues that then are kind of getting engaged from the kids' excitement? I'm curious about that.
Yes. So just if you happen to say that this year, we I have a bunch of my colleagues, at least about, I would say, five of them, including my janitorial staff. I got them to go to an AI Scratch class. We took that. We just finished it up. Actually, tomorrow we're having the final meeting on Zoom to talk about what we did. So one of the teachers and the para that works in a room with her, they came to the class, was very excited. And I have all the BBots. So I took the class, they learned about it, and she teaches kindergarten. So she was able to take the BBots after I showed her what to do. And I demonstrated how they work. And I showed her, you also have an online version of the BBot. So I said, what you do, my suggestion to her was take them online first. So it would be like plug, then unplug. So plug them in there first so they can see how BBot moves, show them the arrows and the way that they go, and have them go to the smart board and touch the screen and get them to move. And she had one little boy in there who is on the spectrum, and he really doesn't get engaged in anything. But as soon as she put that thing on the floor, the BBot, and then there's a large mat that I got that has just basically a big, large, long blue graph paper. And so she put letters in different spots of the graph mat. And they had to move the BBot to the letter. So how many, you know, what was the algorithm to get them there? This little boy was on the spectrum, was engaged the entire time. She was so excited. She said, I want to be a technology teacher. I don't know what I'm going to do. Because this was awesome. And so you know, she's excited. And the janitorial staff, he came when I was in my after school program. We did, with the older kids, we did AI. With them with facial recognition.
Yeah.
And, so we went into Scratch with that. So you load in, and then there's a add-on within Scratch, an add-on called facial recognition, and you code, and you can have Scratch the Cat move if you lift your eyebrows, or if you smile, or if you frown, and they have to program within Scratch and do that. And they learn about big data and how machine learning works. And so that's what the older ones learn. And so a lot of my colleagues are now excited, and hopefully they'll talk to other colleagues and start integrating this into their classroom, because you can do it with reading, you can do it with math, all of it. Social studies, science, which is a matter of integration and being trained to do it. And then now that she's done it once, now she's like, I want to do more. I was like, hold on, we have more classes, you know, we'll be able to do some more. So they have a whole set. Oh, BBots.
That is awesome. Well, it's like sometimes it's just giving them the experience to feel confident enough, right? That like, hey, I can do this too. And I think, go ahead, Bridget.
I think a lot of teachers, in like the elementary teachers, once they get kind of an idea or sparked and get a little confidence themselves, then naturally their brain starts to keep going and going like, oh, I could incorporate or integrate this, because that's what elementary teachers do all day, every day, is thinking about how can they integrate all those subjects into the learning of a student. So the exciting part is that's where computer science needs to live as well.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And hopefully that's what I'm getting at, because like the school was very excited about it. And I don't want the excitement to die. So like when we come back, you know, right now everyone's getting ready for the end of the school, you know, in the break. So we come back in January, we have our meeting before we go off into winter break. So hopefully the conversation will be okay. What's going to be the next steps? Is there another class, or is there some way that I can help you all develop more skills when you can integrate this little lesson? And again, it can be unplugged, because there's so many other things you can do to teach your students all that the script that you have to, all of the curriculum you got to get through. If you integrate computer science or computational thinking, it's gonna, you're still teaching the same thing. You're just teaching it in a different way. And my words to all of the teachers, you're not doing anything different. What you're doing now, you're not teaching a different curriculum. You're teaching the same curriculum in a 21st century way, because this is the way these kids have to be able to think when they get older. Like even right now in our jobs, in our career, we collaborate and we develop curriculum and ways of lesson plans and other in a collaborative way, in a 21st century way. We don't look, right now we're on Zoom and we're doing podcasts and so we can't expect to keep on teaching our kids the way without incorporating computational thinking and some kind of computer science, because whatever job they have, I don't care if they become a nurse, an artist, if they run their own auto mechanic shop, they're going to need some kind of understanding of how to engage with software, with different people across the world, in all types of different ways that involve computer or unplugged activities that involve that soft skills, collaborative collaboration, and things like that.
No one can see because it's a podcast by nature of that. The bridge and I like, yep.
Yeah.
And I think that's the other thing is like, I kind of start to see, not kind of, I absolutely see this as an equity issue, right? If like, if we don't make sure all kids get this, then that gap just gets wider. And so I think it's so important that we give kids access. And I think, like you said, Bridget and I have the opportunity to visit lots of classrooms because we're not in them anymore, but kids are engaged and having fun. And I think especially after COVID, that making sure that we're engaging kids and that they want to be there and they feel like their strengths are getting valued. I just think, at least in my humble opinion, that computer science helps you to get there, or and especially the computational thinking for those young ones.
And the teachers appreciate when they come, when I have any of my kindergarten or pre-K classes, when they come, right now we're working on an alphabet from A to G. So each time they come in, they hear they talk about the letter A. We then do an animal where I show them something I've already done already. I show them the animal that I already created. And it's a giant A, a big 11 by 14 piece of construction paper. I draw out a large A with a stencil that I have above my smart board from A to G. And then I create, let's say, alligator. And so I make all of the stuff and I show it to the kids. I say, okay, now let's decompose this picture. We're unplugged, right?
Yeah,
but it's made with googly eyes. It has green paper for the mouth and the tail. It has white paper inside. Oh, I see black marker that's going around the A. Okay, now that we decompose it, now I want you to recreate what I did. What are we going to do first? First, we're going to take the black marker and we're going to trace around the A. So now they're doing letter writing skills. They're also now doing the algorithm. What's next? Now we're going to put on the white paper or whatever color paper inside the A. Then we're going to draw the mouth and the tail. And we're going to put green paper there and the little claws. And so they're doing that. And so when they walk out of my classroom, they're walking out with a big piece of paper like this. And then, oh, what's the sound of A? A, 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 A. And then, the single sounds. And so they have gotten the letter A. They'll remember that. They'll remember A is alligator. And then they'll remember that. Then they go into, next time they come, they're working on B. It's a whole other different animal that I do with different pieces. And they got to decompose it and then reconstruct it each time they come in. And so every time they leave, they're leaving with this piece that they'll stay in their head. They'll remember C for cat. They'll remember the two sounds for C. And then I also read books that have to do with the letter. So I'm reading about circus and cats. And so they'll remember those. And then they make a cat. And then they walk out with the cat and they remember the two sounds of C. So we've done all of that when they come to media. And then they walk out with the memory of learning their letters, which will be reinforced in their classroom, because that's what they're learning anyway.
How long do you get to see them?
40 minutes every 2 weeks.
So something I hear often, I'm just curious about if you experience this and then how you handle it. What I hear from teacher librarians often is they're a little nervous, especially with things that are about computational thinking or computer science, because they see kids kind of not quite as big of a gap as you, but like maybe they see them every sixth day or every fourth day. And what they seem to notice is kids aren't recalling what they did the last time. And oftentimes they don't have 40 minutes. So like, well, if I spend the first 10 minutes reminding them, and then I want to do a wrap-up activity, I have such a short amount. So I guess I'm curious, like, since you've got them so engaged, are you experiencing that? But then also, what are the types of things you're doing to kind of get them re-engaged, but keep kind of a through line with that computational thinking and the library media skills?
All right. So one thing that I do is constant repetition. That is key. And then you got to do it with different modalities. Now, I happen to be blessed, thank you, Lord, with the ability with the ability to be an actress, with the ability to draw. Those are natural gifts of mine. So everything you just said, I'm doing. So when they walk into the room, I'm singing. When they're doing the activity, I say, okay, so trace around the sea, draw a nose, draw the tail, write the word cat at the top. And I say it over and over again. So by when they leave there, they're singing these songs. So when they come back, I say, what letters did you do last time? We did C. What's the two sound of the C? And then we move on to the next letter. And I don't see him again in the 2 weeks. So it you have to have somewhere. And if you're not a singer, and I would say, make sure there's music involved. Make sure there's movement involved. Make sure there is constant repetition where it's memorable. You know, so sometimes I will forget and they will remind me what they've already done. And they haven't seen me in 14 days. And the other thing it has to do is a lot of front loading, which is most teachers we always do.
But you've mentioned several things too, that you're doing that's like that universal design, that multiple modalities, like the singing, the actor, the like probably, you probably are using your hands a lot and making gestures.
Yes, I am.
Connectors for kids, as well as then there is tons of research about imagery,
yes,
visuals and sketching that really connect as well. So you are just offering all of these multiple modalities from the get-go, like, yes, not after the fact, but at the beginning. So you're hitting.
Yeah, as soon as they walk in the door, I am moving and I'm very animated. I'm like a large cartoon. Yeah. You know, so they're not going to forget. I'm making faces. I'm falling on the floor. I'm laughing. I'm moving. You know, I'm doing all of that. I'm extremely animated. So, and they're laughing and they're, you know, so, and they're having fun. And I'm asking them a question. They're asking me questions. You know, I'll read a book and say, and we're going to slow down. And I'll pretend like I fell asleep. And they go, Miss St. John, wake up. Oh, sorry, sorry. I got to remember stuff like that, you know?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. But you do. I mean, That gets them engaged. You're giving them different ways to represent the information and connect with it and also show what they know. So,
mm-hmm. Well, and I think that was the, at least to me, some of the fun part of the course we did and how I feel super fortunate to have gotten to meet you is that I feel like that was the other aha, is a lot of it was like, oh, it's just good pedagogy. It doesn't matter if I'm in a computer science classroom or if I'm teaching computational thinking or if I'm teaching the alphabet, that like some of this stuff, if you're a teacher that's nervous about teaching computer science, it's kind of like, hey, remind yourself that your foundation is pedagogy and kids. You know how to engage them. You know how to help them to learn things. What would you say? That's what I'm curious about. Like, what would you say to another teacher librarian or an elementary teacher that's like nervous, like, I don't even know where to start?
Right. Well, again, you just hit the nail. You're a teacher. So yeah, use the skills and things that you learn. Now, I know certain classroom management, certain things are not going to happen, you know, until you walk into that classroom, as you do, but actually do it. So a lot of things you learn in school, which is all in theory. When you get in the actual classroom, we see the reality of it. If you already know how to do that, now it's just a matter of, okay, how do I deliver this? Then also making sure you keep yourself up to speed. I take a lot of classes. I'm going to school over the summer. I'm taking, like, I took a course with you, Corey. I'm always taking some kind of class to keep up to date. You cannot just lay back and say, well, I got my degree already. No, stuff is changing too fast. So you have to keep up. So I'm constantly taking courses, constantly involved in things like that.
Awesome. Okay. Are there things you wonder after reading the article?
The only thing all of the pieces of, let's say, computational thinking, and how do those two bridge? That's the thing, my wondering. Like, you have, like here it shows computational thinking, decomposition, evaluation, generalization. And you have the unplugged activities, and just on a like, cause not everyone's going to do, like, let's say what I'm doing, or can, or have the, it's the training. It's like, how do we take this, which is good information, like it's just good pedagogy, and how do we take it and now change the pattern for teachers to be able to integrate this, where it becomes a part of how they teach, or it becomes part of it. So these lessons, like the big book of pedagogy, should probably be a part of pre-teacher service.
Yeah.
So that when I look at these articles, this should be a part of something that you do as a pre-service teacher. That you should be learning how to teach lessons unplugged and learning these words and like that. So that's my wondering when I'm reading these, there's all this good information, but how do we get into the hands of teachers, the ones who are already in service? Yep. Not that it's late, but it's harder once you've been teaching for 30 years one way. And that's one of the reasons why I say constantly taking classes, because I have been teaching for 30 years. And the one reason why I take classes is because I don't want to stay stuck in the way that I've been teaching, because things are changing.
I think those, like you're saying, those small steps, like we want new teachers to come in knowing the benefit and some of the research behind how important it is that you start unplugged before we move to a device. And if they don't get access to this, then they've got so much to learn on top of all that kind of stuff as well.
I think the one thing that sticks out that you just, like everything you said, we need to start teaching in a 21st century way. Yes. And that unplugged, that computational thinking, that computer science, kids are hungry for it. And the adults, we don't want to be the barriers to bring that to them. So we're excited to have people like you out doing that work, and we can share your story.
Well, my story is so much fun. And I enjoy it. So you have to enjoy it. It's a lot of fun.
Well, I feel like that's pretty evident that you enjoy it. I mean, I'm just saying.
Yeah, definitely.
Yes. Okay. You can come to Kamar class anytime. Just let me know when you're coming and you can come and join.
I'm grateful for you. I'm sure. I know your kids and your families are too, but we appreciate your time. Please reach out to us at cspodcast@gwaea.org. And use our hashtag BYTECS, that's BYTE, on social media.
So keep the conversations going until the next Byte of CS.